Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Storyboard on A Team of Voices. A Team of Voices is a group located on allpoetry.com, the largest poetry site in the world. I always like to say thank you to Kevin and his crew for keeping the site up and running, giving us a place to share our poetry. A Team of Voices is run by Deborah Lee, and if you join the site, you can just go on and knock on her door, and she will let you in. We have different hosts, different shows every night of the week, almost. We do jokes, poetry games, slams, talk shows, magic tricks, contests, special events, and different themes. Team of Voices is also sponsored by AP Taylor. Thank you very much for giving us a place to geek out live. I am your host, and tonight we are celebrating Star Wars Volume 26, The Book of Boba Fett. And every Wednesday night we're here celebrating characters and stories that we love. So without further ado, I will invite on our callers. We've got two already, which is great. Hello, Rakentor.
Hey, hey.
How are you?
I'm finding my way. I'm doing good.
Good. And then right after that, we have Pretty Bird. Hello.
Hello, hello.
How are you?
I am good. I am good. Glad to be here.
Good. I'm still getting down my intro. It's like such a big change from my... After 3 years of saying my intro the one way, it is like I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
You're disenfranchised.
I know. All right, well, I do want to speak a little bit about the music. It was from the theme song, and we are going to be closing out with the theme song. We have a special halftime show, thanks to Pretty Bird and Rack and Floor, who sent some home points. But the theme song is from the show, and it is by Ludwig Göransson, and he is a Swedish composer, conductor, songwriter, and record producer. He has scored films such as Rocky, Creed, Creed II, Venom, Turning Red, many, many others. He frequently collaborated with Childish Gambino, producing his studio albums, Camp, Because the Internet, and Awaken My Love, and, of course, The Book of Boba Fett. So he has a long-lasting career. And, I love it. It sounds like Western, and the show did take on a more Western-like view. I think some people are like either really left or really right with this, because Steven still gets upset every time I mention Boba Fett, because he's like, he's dead, it's not real. Steven gets, you know, he's a little bit of a purist when it comes to Star Wars. I think he's like, what is all this stuff? You know, he's telling me Harrison Ford's alive. Yeah, he's like, Han Solo isn't dead. I'm like, yeah, well, you know. Me, I look at it this way. I've watched the show, and their reasoning of how he escaped from the Sarlacc pit was pretty convincing. And now we get to, and I think so many lesser known characters really didn't get their due in the franchise, you know, and now you feel like they are now. So I'm really not going to complain. What do you think, Rec?
I think in a world where, you know, they've got an entire clone army, they could find any excuse they want to bring him back. So, you know, I ain't going to argue.
He's so mad about Darth Maul. He's like, how do you cut a guy in half? And he goes down the reactor shaft, and he's coming back. And I'm like, there's a really good storyline behind that. And he's like, no. I'm like, yes, but... All right, Pretty Bird, what do you think? And you can tell me, no, it's terrible. You know, just be honest.
I lean a little closer to Steven. I mean, things bother me because we're old, okay? So things bother me. Like, I am not over the fact that the lightsaber is this powerful thing that takes precision and mostly two hands to yield, and then all these new movies are flipping around one-handed like it doesn't weigh anything. And I'm just like, what? That's not regal. What the hell? No. Do not fly with the damn thing. Hold it right. It's like a samurai sword. Driving me nuts. So I've got my issues too. It's okay.
Yeah, I feel like most of the time, if I ever talk to somebody about the new canon, they're mostly like, no, it's not real, or you know, it's either one way or another.
The problem is in the first faction of canon between the old and the decades later new. There was a whole thing that there was supposed to be the super twins. There was supposed to be this and that. And they're like, no, we're going this way. And I'm just like, ah. And so I'm not over it. I feel violated.
There are some things that I was like, how could you rewrite that? Like Kylo Ren's story. I wasn't sure why they rewrote that, because, they messed up the kids. Like, they messed that up. So I was kind of confused on that and how they went back on that.
That's what I'm saying.
Show, like,
some things you don't get over.
So, yes. So there are some things that I still question. Things like bringing back Boba Fett from the Sarlacc pit to have a Boba Fett show, I don't mind. but there are some things I'm like, I don't really know why they changed that. But, I mean, I really want a General Grievous show. I just love General Grievous.
Yeah.
I love his background story. I know I've said it a million times, but all these lesser known characters, like, he's not lesser known, but he didn't really get a spotlight. I think he needs his own show, his storyline show, because his storylines are wonderful. And yes, you could read the comics, and yes, you could read the books, but a lot of people don't even know their stories because a lot of people just watch TV. And I don't, and I personally wouldn't mind, and I don't watch a lot of TV, but I wouldn't mind seeing it on the big screen, like, even if it was just an animation. So.
And if he got the extra attention, maybe he wouldn't be so grumpy.
I know. Maybe he wouldn't be so grievous about everything. All right. Pretty Bird, how long do we have you for? Is this like an unknown, or are we?
Yeah, it's an unknown.
It's an unknown. Okay, so I am going to drop your first poem, and then I'm going to play a clip. Is that okay? I usually do a clip and then a poem and then a clip and then a poem, but we can start off with a poem.
Oh, that's fine. Do I need to pull up the
poem,
or you have them all there with you?
I have them all. Yeah, I have them all. So do you have a preference on which one you want to start with?
No, we can go from top to bottom, leave that bottom one for last because it's a little risque.
Okay. All right. Let's see. So I've got This Is the Way, and this is the quote. I know. I should be prepared, but I'm not always prepared with my things here.
I'm just playing because of your phonics for this particular quote.
Yeah, you know, I don't even know if I have that in the studio right now because I think it was one of those ones that I had to I had to bring a lot of stuff over from Poetic Slice, so some of the stuff I didn't bring all the way yet. Huh?
Shit gets lost when you move.
I know. A couple things did get lost, actually. And I think, I just have this one.
I have spoken.
I have spoken. I don't have This Is the Way. All right, we'll figure it out. We'll find it. All right, Pretty Bird, you are up on the board. And
there's a lag, so I just dropped it myself. So sorry. There, you're already there because you're good, but my computer's just crap. So none of my poems are Star Wars related, but I pulled things as close to the quotes as I can. So that is This Is the Way, and this is, and that's the way it is. And it goes like this. Expectations keep falling down rabbit holes. We go hand in hand. We close our eyes to the sound of screeching tires, halting progressive thoughts and twisted metal, caging the rage in the machine. Where ghosts prevail amongst the nether that is neither darkness nor light. Betwixt the two, bewildered by the stars in the eyes of a soul too familiar, reflections of introspection out in the cold, withered in the frozen desert of just deserts, wondering why penance is due, obligatory shame from shameless pride held to standards by Velcro and duct tape that can't spackle the cracks and fracture truth. And pause.
I love it. And I love that you are open to finding poems that just fit the quotes because I am totally like I'm totally good with that. Sometimes people don't believe me, I don't think. So I think this is so wonderful. I think they're like, I don't know. And I'm like, yes, just bring a poem that fits the quotes. It's fine. There's great quotes. I love this. And I haven't read it before, which is great, so it's new for me. And I love how you say, down the rabbit holes we go. And I think for me, I admire people that say things how they are. And even sometimes if it's sometimes a little forward and a little like, oh, okay, because you know, you always know where you stand with people like that. They're not hiding underneath where you say like a cracked foundation here. And the thing about you know, about mistruths and people that are not honest, that are not going to be really honest behind your back either. And when you're having interpersonal relationships of any kind, if that kind of falls through, this is what I think about. Velcro, you know, down here to the bottom. Velcro and duct tape that can't spackle the cracks. Really love that and fracture truth. And I really, 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 really love that. And I do know your perspective on truth. I think it's very fierce.
Hard.
And yes, it's very, very, very fierce. And I have a best friend who is very on that spectrum too. I would say farther on that spectrum than I am because I'm like, well, it's not kind, so I might not say it. Unless people say, I really want the truth, then I will really tell them the truth. But I often will just be like, maybe saying nothing is better than, you know, and it depends who I am with too. So if I'm in a safe space and I feel safe to tell somebody else, how it is, but I tend to be very, I don't know, I just tend to be very hesitant of confrontation, actually. So I think that it's not out of a place of malice. It's out of a place of confrontation. So if I feel safe in a conversation and I feel safe with somebody, I'm definitely more open and more like, this is how it is, and more blunt. And then if I feel a little less safe, I might say something in a more receiving kind of way. But my best friend, she's just so honest all the time, and I love that about her. And I think that, you know, over the years, you know, I've become a little bit, you know, like if somebody says something, it takes me a beat. But I find myself, but I find my words, and I force myself sometimes to work through that fear. And I think if you don't, you are not building good relationships. And I think that's why it's towards the end. I mean, I value that. And because I think ultimately what will happen is towards the end, you can't fix, you know, relationships. And even though someone might not be outwardly lying, are they really being true to themselves if they're, you know, being also accommodating? You know, you're being so accommodating. I think that's another one, too. You try to accommodate people so much that you lose yourself within that as well. So there's negatives in other ways. Even if you're not trying to be outwardly malicious, even being accommodating to people can be detrimental as well to relationships. So excellent piece. And Rack and Tor, what do you think?
I got to start with your thought process a little bit because, you know, when you choose your quotes, you know, anything that's well written is going to be in context. The character is saying it for a reason. So that reason, even though it was written to a Star Wars quote, doesn't necessarily apply to Star Wars. It's kind of a universal thing. So if the character has a real reason to be giving you this quote, then any lover of words that's writing a poem about that quote is gonna be relevant. It's gonna fit. So, you know, even though she wasn't talking about Star Wars, she was talking about the truth. Well, the quote is about the truth. So the quote is the truth. The truth is, well, the situation. So that they're all intermingled. And you know, she has a not that this is news to anybody that's ever listened to her. You know, a lovely vocabulary, vernacular. I mean, even just down to the way words are pronounced, even though they're spelled the same, but no, it's pronounced this way and this way. I mean, it's just beautiful to listen to, and it sometimes it even feels like it changes. Well, it does change the way the thing is, the poem is read, and the meanings behind it. And you know, again, you latching on to the idea of you know, the spackling and duct taping and velcroing and all those things. It's applicable to the language because that's the intent of what the sentence is. So, you know, she's really deconstructing, you know, the language in a way that's just relevant to what she's speaking of. And it sounds like, you know, she's randomly choosing the words, but she's not. She's very specifically going, you know, well, I'm going to pull this out over here and this feeling over here, and this is what we end up with. And, you know, people that appreciate that sit here in awe with their jaw, you know, agape. And just, you know, it's just, I love it. Thank you.
Thank you. So just if I may. About honesty, there is a big difference between being honest and being in your face about shit nobody asked you. And so while I have no filter, you know, I will also, I'm very much, you know, I ain't going to say it. Somebody else could say it. But if they ask me, my first response is, are you sure you want to know? Because I'll tell you. Without, like, 100% of the time, are you sure you want to ask me that now? It's like, I'm warning you, I'm in the mood. You want my response. Oh, here we go. All right. But I won't lie. I mean, I'm not going to be mean. I'm not going to be a jerk about it. There's no reason. There's no reason honesty ever has to be brutal unless somebody's not facing a simple truth that then you need to open their eyes. There's no reason to be mean, just to be honest. You know, but
yeah.
I'm not much of an accommodator. And when I do, it gives me such anxiety, as you know, Raph, when I bite my tongue in order to not save face for me, because I give not one single, you know, crap. But if I know that it's going to make somebody else uncomfortable or cause them undue anxiety, and it's not really that big a deal, I'll put it aside and maybe not mention it at that time. But it builds up, and one day I'm going to, like, explode, and I'm going to hurt somebody's feelings real bad. So I try not to do that very often because it literally gives me anxiety because it feels like lies just because it's not the whole truth. Because lies of omission are still fully lies. If you let me believe something you know is not entirely true, then you have just that is a lie to me because I'm a whole. I'm very particular. You don't have to do anything, and I'll still think you lied to me because you allowed me to believe something false. Because if you knew,
I
didn't. Yeah, but that's the same thing to me. So that's the way I teach my kids. So I'm sure that their friends think that they're holy too.
If you really want to get us started, mention the prize party.
Oh, sweet,
you know,
Jesus.
My mom, she, my godmom, she, who I lived with most of the time, well, you know, a lot of the time, she was so strict on lying ever since I was little. And she was always like, listen, if you lie, you're going to get in a lot more trouble than you are with the truth. And I was very young, and the one thing that I always wanted was to be trusted. Like, that was number one. I want people to trust what I say. And I had pride in that, even when I was little. And it used to drive my sisters up the wall, because whenever anything happened, she would go to me, and if she asked me directly, I would never lie to her. I would always say, yes, we did that. Yes, we did that. We snuck out of the house. Even as a teenager, when we were, like, if we did something bad, she was like, did you do this?
Yeah.
I didn't, because I didn't lie to her.
I used to sit on my sister.
I didn't. I could have gotten beat up, but I just would not lie. And she asked me directly. I think we had a pig roast one time, and it was the first time my sisters and I, like, we broke into, like, the alcohol. I was 13, and they had this big pig roast party, and it was the first time we were just like, oh, and my mom was like, blah, 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 and then, you know, my two sisters said, though, and she came to me, and I said, yes, we did. Well, I said, yes, I did. I said, yes, I did. And we didn't even get in trouble, even because she was true to her word. She was like, okay. She's like, let's not do that again. She talked about it. Yeah, I just never did, because I felt like if I lied to her, she would never trust me again. So I'm pretty honest when it comes to
that. I punish my kids a lot worse for lying than anything they ever lied about.
Yeah, yeah. And I very much grew up in that type of environment. So I was a hard kid to punish, I'll tell you. You'd be like, go to your room, okay? That's where I want to be.
OMG. So, do you want a 5-minute diet time on surprise party?
I'm sorry?
Do you want a 5-minute diet time on surprise party?
What's that?
It's, you know, the thing is that in my world, that is how to lose all your friends in a day, because that means that everybody I talk to that shows up at that surprise party that did not do something that I asked them to do with me, or did not do this, or did not, you know, what, all these things that they're hiding from me for a nice surprise means that they are now all liars, and I don't hold the same regard for them because they all lied to my face. I don't care what the reason, don't ever tell me a surprise party, because the person throwing a surprise party is the king of all liars. And if they know me at all, they will know that I will not get over it. And no. So that's how anal I am. It, you know, I will help somebody plan a surprise party if I don't have to lie to the person. I'm like, if they ask me what I am doing, I am going to tell them. So make sure you put me, I will decorate. Okay. But don't make me the one to take them out to do things, you know? Everybody there, all your friends and family, they all of a sudden become liars. And it takes a while to not, because to me, there is no white lie. There's no little lie and big lie. A lie is a lie is a lie is a lie. You know, what changes is the amount of trust and how much it weighs, you know, but a lie is a lie.
Yeah.
So I am that kind of whole. My bad. People love me or hate me, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. I don't know if I, yeah. I
don't mind surprise parties. See, I don't mind surprises, but it's the whole party thing. Not for me. I can't. It hurts my soul too much to ever enjoy that kind of celebration of my pain.
Yeah.
I have issues.
It's fine. I like that kind of commitment. It's good. I mean, it is, right? I think some people, too, don't – I think that people that to say they don't like surprises, I feel like people should honor that. You know, I have a friend, she doesn't like gifts. She has a really, really hard time with gifts. Even, like, so it's like impossible to get her anything or surprise her with something for her birthday because she has so much anxiety about it. So I'm just very forward. I said, listen, we got to talk about your birthday. I want to do something. What can we do? Do you want me to make you dinner? Like, what can we do? Like, we'll talk about it together so you're okay. but you think, well, I just want to get them to something. Well, you're not really thinking about the person. You're thinking about what you want, right? So. There's that, too. Yeah. All right, I'm going to play my first clip, and then we're going to do it on the phone. So, Pretty Bird, just so that you know, some clips are long, some clips are short. And I play them in order for the show so that you can get an idea of, like, what's going on. So sit back, relax, get some popcorn, give the dog the chew toy for a little while because you'll be safe, and enjoy some Boba Fett.
Boba Fett was a man with no name kind of character, lone gunslinger when I was a kid. You didn't know his face. You didn't know who he was. That was always hinted at in the EU, and stories were kind of shadowy in explaining maybe who he was. And then so it was kind of a bombshell when the prequels came out, and it was explained that he was the clone of this bounty hunter Jango Fett. That was completely new information.
Hang on, son. We'll move into the asteroid field, and we'll have a couple of surprises for him.
That's the interweaving that Star Wars had over the course of many, many years through the movies, and we're able to do that in a much more condensed time frame. So bringing in Boba Fett and seeing the fans' reaction to it and the fun that we had collaborating, that was the inspiration for us to go and talk to everyone at Disney Plus and Kathy and everyone at Lucasfilm about if there was a potential to explore this as a series.
In the firelight, he is helped by the warrior. In putting the final bits of hardware on the weapon, he lifts his custom Swendek heavy stick. He gives it a proficient twirl, then holds it in both hands across his thighs. He stares up into the stars as his new, transformed silhouette is etched into the horizon glow of the desert planet. He is a new man. He is no longer alone. He is a member of a tribe. I'll see you make him.
When George first spoke to me about Boba Fett, he immediately said, I cast this amazing actor from New Zealand called Tamura Morrison to play Jango Fett. He said, if you ever do Boba Fett, you should cast Tamura to play Boba because he's such a remarkable actor.
Boba was the guy who was the only one that caught Han Solo.
And that's what gave him, you know, the kudos. And the fact that he was mysterious and the fact that you didn't see him too much, I think that's worked in my favor, that we were able to sort of, okay, well, let's give him a taste. Let's give the fans a taste of what he actually can do. For me, it was just a matter of getting those episodes in the season two of The Mandalorian right for me and working hard and trying to make it as powerful, exciting as I could. And maybe something would come of it. So here we are.
This thing, it's gold. It's rugged.
Tim Morrison is Boba Fett because he's so similar to the character himself in a lot of ways. He has such immense presence, yet a quiet softness to him, kindness and generosity that can just be really disarming. So he brings all sides of himself when he plays the character.
We'll have to ask the God of Emotion to send some emotions very shortly. I'm running out of time. But I'm blessed because I draw on my Maori roots. We have the haka to draw on, that energy. We have the waia, the tangi, the pa, the pokeka. All these forms of song that come from our ancestors. They've kind of put me in the right mode or mood.
Quite well, we just sort of click. We'll do a little training. He's got a little bit ahead of me in the press-up department, might add, and his biceps have gone a little bit bigger than mine as well. And then after we did the weights, well, we pull out the guitars, and away we go.
I like playing music with my actors and collaborators. It builds a creative trust, and you have to be in sync with everyone and in a creative flow, just like you need to be when you're filming. Keeps that fluid momentum. Finishing my season two episode, The Tragedy, John and Dave both called me one day and said that they really liked what they were seeing and my approach to Boba Fett. They said they didn't want me just to come back and direct an episode or two, but to bring me on in a bigger capacity as an executive producer. And it was one of the best phone calls you could ever get.
I can't say enough of how important Robert was to the whole process of bringing Boba to life. He loves the character. He makes his own animatics with action figures sometimes. He's an expert. He's a Jedi. He knows his stuff.
It's kind of cool that we hadn't seen you really do this before. You've been training with him, but we didn't see this part. I just thought John's story structure was really brilliant and that it was telling a Boba story that went forward, you know, continuing from where we left off last year, yet it flashed back to answer all our burning questions and fill in what happened to Boba after the Sarlacc pit.
One of the challenges for sort of explaining how Boba Fett survived Sarlacc Pit is really, you know, going back and kind of doing the science ourselves, you know, thinking logically, well, how could he survive? And maybe there's an air pocket in there, and maybe, you know, he actually found a dead stormtrooper and was able to use his oxygen so that he can kind of breathe. And then from there, how does he escape? You know, because the Sarlacc is a huge creature, and he's, you know, dozens of feet underground. And so we started to think about, okay, well, logically, what would that be? How would that make sense? And I think John came up with the idea that, you know, well, literally he's just in his gut and it needs to be a very claustrophobic space.
We had to make a bunch of stomach walls that looked very believable and veins and texture and intestine type tubes and cover it with slime and bring that all together.
Ah!
I think the thing with Boba is that once he goes down into the Sarlacc pit, once he's in the subterranean world, the underworld, that transitional moment changes someone. I mean, how could it not? And you have an opportunity for him to come out on the other side and make a choice about what kind of person he wants to be.
Awesome. One thing, by the way, I forgot to give like a pre-thing for that. That's Pedro Pascal, who was brought on for executive producer. And if you're not sure who Pedro Pascal is, it's who the actor that plays the Mandalorian. So they brought in the actor that played plays the Mandalorian because they originally brought in Boba Fett on the Mandalorian show and then took him and gave him his own show, and they had him as executive producer. And he also did, like, digital – he made this new sand creature, and he does this, like, digital computer stuff to try to image that. He's a big fan, and it's just really cool how they did that. And, by the way, one of the things that I loved about about The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett is that they still used puppeteering. And you don't really see that a lot. I mean, everybody's so big on CGI. And I mean, I don't have anything against CGI. I love CGI. But there's something about puppeteering and building those. The person who plays Fennec Shan, you know, she said it was amazing to be able to ride on a full-size replica of the front of it and most of the mechanical back of a Bantha, and, you know, and not just get a green screen. So, and you can tell that in the show, you can just tell the integrity of that quality, that it was puppeteering, and I just really love that about the show, that it did that a lot. And you can jump in at any time. Anyway, just so you know.
Well, not when you're talking about the pit, we ain't jumping in.
All right. So I have Pretty Bird. And Pretty Bird, you haven't read one of my Star Wars poems, so I might bring one of mine that I already have written, just because you haven't heard it yet.
Yes. That would be awesome.
You wrote to, I don't speak frog. You wrote to that quote.
Well, that was the last half of it, if I can remember.
It's okay. It's fine. That's the thing. Like, quote. I love when people, one thing that Rack does, he's so amazing at, he just can connect anything to anything. He's like, this relates to this because of this, 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 and this, and this. I'm like, that's a lot of connecting, and I love it. So, that's great.
It's a reach. It's a stretch.
You don't understand, find a frog quote.
You don't understand.
I'm sorry, lady. I don't understand frog is what it is.
Oh.
I thought that was hysterical. And actually, Rack was the one. You have a frog? Yeah, I have a frog.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like, he's just pulled stuff out. He's like, that's relatable.
you're so nice and ladylike. You just leave the ass right out of things. I'm like all ass all the time. Like, he pulls it right out of his ass.
What are you
saying? Pulls it right out. I'm like, and in my head, I'm saying, out of his ass. So, you know, I'll shut up now. I am so sorry.
Okay, it's fine. I won't be sorry.
Oh, I'm in the mood. It's going to be one of them nights, so it'll be fun. All right, this is I've Always Hated Frogs, which I do, by the way, in real life. Not a fan. Okay, it goes like this. Barred, afraided, pushed tangibly behind intangible lines. Numb to the sting after wet slap words, imprisoned freedom to feel. Lingering in the shadows, perception and phantom memories, sustenance languishes. Beyond time's outstretched fingers, deep within midnight silence, the telling of was in still air. Between the dream and the nothing, in the swamp of yesterdays, is a distant song and familiar time. Amphibious night calls, searching darkness in razored mimicry, threatening the sting of wetted words. And the freedom to feel. End poem.
Hmm. Excellent. Now, is this a play off of the Frog Prince?
No, I just really freaking hate frogs, and so that's my nightmare.
I don't know. I don't know. They're kind of cute.
Okay, so I have to tell you the story? I will tell you the story.
Well, let me comment first, and then, yes, you can tell me the story. So, but I like frogs, so if your story is going to make me hate frogs, I don't know. But
no, they're not going to make you hate frogs, but you'll understand my trauma.
Okay, all right. So I thought this was a brilliant piece, and I really, when you get down to the whole piece is well done. For me, the part where you get down to between the dream and the nothing and the swamp of yesterdays is a distant song in familiar time. That is definitely my favorite stanza. I loved how you bring, there's the croaking and the frog song, and I do think that I just like the reference there. And then, of course, the swamp of yesterdays I thought was quite brilliant. Because, it's reflective. And even if this is to something different and a specific meaning to you, I think because of the language you chose, I think, many people can kind of take it to different places, especially when you're using phrases like swamp of yesterdays and somebody's thinking about a swamp figuratively that they might have gone through emotionally. Even if this was figuratively or based on something or even if it was based on a nightmare. And I think because it is written that way, it's quite brilliant. I really like amphibious night calls, searching darkness. I think I'm going to have to change my mind. I think those two are my favorite, but the one is still a top one. And then the last stanza really stings. I mean, when you talk about wedded words and the freedom to feel. I think this was really brilliant, and I think it could go in different ways. For me, anyway, I think that readers can kind of take it to different places. Raconteur, what do you think?
Yeah, I like it goes back to what I was saying about the way you choose the quotes. I don't speak frog. Could be you know it's about the lack of understanding of the frog, and you know, well, I just kind of I don't get it, and in the situation, in the context of what she's written, you know, she's kind of you're okay over there, you do you, and I'm just going to be, over here, and I don't understand you, I don't want to understand you, I want no part of you. You've got your swamp and your noises, and you know, you exist despite not wanting you to be around, but you know, there you are, so I'll just ignore you.
Excellent. You know, I think I think that I just, whenever I'm reading poetry or writing poetry, I'm so deep into metaphor, I just always look for metaphor. Yeah. Someone's like, no, it's just what it is. It's just what it is. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. Like, my mind is like on a different plane of thinking. I'm like, okay, what does this mean? What is this a metaphor for? And then sometimes you're like, no, it's just what it says. Oh, okay. All right, pretty bird.
Yes. So, you guys are all from the north. Do you know that the swamp smells like putrid rot?
Oh, swamp gas.
It is really noxious and gross and muggy, full and full of all kinds of creepy crawly creatures that want to eat you. I think it smells bad. I just wanted to make my little
here,
but
we have frogs.
For you.
There's a lot of toxins.
Well, a bog is kind of like a mini swamp. It's all wet and there's low tide, right?
There's all kinds of toxins in swamps, yeah.
Well,
I don't have too many swamps. I live all in a forest with lakes with frogs that are not in swamps. They're just in nice lakes.
Oh, yeah, no. Don't come to Florida. Florida is not your friend. this is all when you're stuck in the past or in what was the now, and then it's not the now, and the now doesn't feel like anything because what was the now, which is now the past, but you're not, that you can't let it go, so it's, you still kind of want to exist in that place, and you can't let that go because nothing else even comes close, but it's been in that same space for so long that it's rotting and sounds like freaking frogs. So here's the frog. I was 12. My brother was, I don't know, 6. And we lived by a canal. And, you know, Florida. I used to, you know, grow tadpoles. I used to be that girl, okay, until I'm 12 years old. I have long, curly hair. And my brother and his little friend had gone down the canal. And it was frog season. So frogs of all sizes. I'm not the big, giant, beefy ones. I would have lost my mind. But frogs of, you know, from adolescence and, you know, medium-sized frogs. Toads, really. They're really quite gross. 5-gallon bucket, and they were pegging them at me. So they're getting stuck in my hair, and I'm just like, and because I'm being inundated with frogs slapping your face, not fun. But they were getting stuck in my hair, so as I'm screaming, pulling them out, they get tangled in the knots, and so I'm pulling frog bits and tearing them to pieces alive, and it's breaking my heart. And then there's guts, and then there's legs moving in my hair, and I have trauma.
Yeah. So I don't like that either.
I do not do frogs. Yeah. And they used to hang outside my window because my window faced the canal, and all you hear is for like half of the year here in Florida. It's god awful.
Oh, my God. It's like, yeah. My brother once put a frog in a cup, and the frog peed in there, and he told me it was a drink, and I drank it. And now I feel like my story is like a baby story compared to that freaking horror story. I run the cup any day over that hair situation. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. No, that was not fun. That was not fun, being covered in frog bits. Not fun. And more than having it stuck in my hair, I couldn't stomp on them. I couldn't kill them. They were just, like, missing limbs and, like, just landing there. And I'm just like, so multi-trauma of the ew, the disgust, the bits and pieces, and the lingering of the separation of, you know, limbs from body. It was not okay. It's not okay.
I'm sorry.
I have all the stories, apparently.
And that's the setup, Sky, from my favorite Gandalf the Frog story that she tells. Well, actually, he was a toad, if I'm not mistaken. Thou shalt not pass. She was leaving her house, and the thing blocked the way. And because of her frog trauma, she was like, you know, get it out, move it.
Oh, my
gosh. I have issues.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, I'll know not to ever make you do anything with frogs. On that note, Deb, how's it going?
I must say I am totally traumatized. We're having late dinner in about 10 minutes, and I think I'm losing my appetite. Oh, my.
I'm so sorry.
I mean, between the trauma from the frog-encrusted tendrils and the pea juice. Oh, my word. You're killing me.
Jeez. Oh, my brother used to do a really weird thing. He once replaced my mom's jelly beans with marbles, and she went down to eat them in the middle of the night and cracked her tooth. Like, he thought he was funny, that one. He sure did.
The house smells great, okay, because there's a roasted chicken in the oven. And then when I was listening to you comment about the frogs, I'm like, oh, well, they say frogs taste like chicken. And then you said about drink, and I'm like, oh, man, trauma.
You wrote me a frog-eating poem for one of my Down the Tubes. You remember that? Those huge,
yeah, that big
prehistoric frogs.
Thank God I've never seen a frog that big, but oh my gosh.
Between putting up Down the Tubes and snakes and frogs.
Being a girl standing there trying to pull frog bits from your hair and movement and oh, I feel for you. And I'm sorry, but you know, a brother who would tell you to drink the pee. I have no words.
Well, all right, Deb, I know that you don't have too much time. I have you up on the board, and you are free to start whatever you like.
Okay. Well, the quote that spoke to me is, I can bring you in warm or I can bring you in cold. And like, it just made me think, you know, cold-hearted people are I have no time for them. My time is much better spent on friends and people who, you know, like, appreciate each other. I don't need that bull. So this is called In Life You Get What You Give. And here we go. I can serve you the sunshine or the hail to warm the cockles or freeze them off. The sun warms, but cold pierces like a nail, then chills bone deep can trigger a cough. To warm the cockles or freeze them off, my reaction is equal to the action you send. Then chills bone deep can trigger a cough, not soothing words that can comfort a friend. My reaction is equal to the action you send. Just like karma, I can dish out the cold rage. Not soothing words that can comfort a friend. So how you choose to treat me is my gauge. Just like karma, I can dish out cold rage, sending frostbite's kiss down your spine. So how you choose to treat me is my gauge, as the back you see walking from you is mine. Sending frostbite's kiss down your spine, a bitch inside me sees when you weep. As the back you see walking from you is mine, but you can lull that bitch into a deep sleep. A bitch inside me sees, then you weep from reaping what you sow into the world. But you can lull that bitch into a deep sleep, and you can bask in the warmth I'll unfurl. From reaping what you sow into the world, the sun warms, but cold pierces like a nail. And you can bask in the warmth I'll unfurl. I can serve you the sunshine or the hail. End poem.
Excellent piece. And I'm going to take this into a different perspective, Deb, but this is when I listen to this, and it could just be my place of you know, where I am every day. But I work with a lot of behavioral students, and part of my job is to help these behavioral students through a hard time. So a kid can be sitting on a desk and completely be, you know, not in a place where they want to learn or listen or anything. You've got to get this kid off the desk who's screaming in the middle of class, or you have to evacuate the whole class, right? You have to see what you're doing. And most of these kids are obviously going through a lot of stuff. And what your poem reminds me of, this perspective, how there's two approaches you can take. You know, I see some approaches, and some adults will go up to these children and be very firm and like, get down and do your work or do this or do that or say whatever. And I don't know why people think that's going to work with a dysregulated child. I don't understand. I mean, I believe in firmness, but when you're in a setting and that child is in school and you have no idea of what's going on at home, or you do have an idea of what's going on, and usually these kids come in dysregulated, and you're going to go up to that kid and you're going to kind of be where you kind of say your actions are, you know, trigger. You use words like trigger. And I think for me, when you're reading this, and I know that you're talking about adults, interpersonal relationships, but for me, I just see this in that lens. I see that in that lens where you could go up to somebody, a child, who's dysregulated, and be very cut, dry, cold, firm. And sometimes they do need that at some point to an extent, I think. It's the way you do it and the relationship you have, I guess. But 9 out of 10 times, that's not going to work. You need to find those ways to soothe and make them feel safe before they're going to listen to you and trust it and be warm about it. You know, like today, I'm just using this example because there was a kid on the desk. No one could get him off the desk, and he was really having a hard time. I went over and I approached it differently. And it was like, hey, why don't you show me that drawing that you've been doing? Got off the desk and showed me that drawing. It got him off the desk. And I think some people forget when they approach people and they talk to people that kindness goes a long way. And just like any other adult that approaches another adult with these kind of negative behaviors, a child will react the same as well, and with no mercy, because they have less of a pretend face than another adult does. And so when you were reading that, that's just where my mind was and my perspective was. Same thing, different situation, I think, than you were speaking of, but same intention. Really well done. Thank you.
Thanks, Guy. And yet, no, I totally agree that the way you would handle a situation with a child is different. But a grown adult is pretty much set in their ways. And if you're going to come at me,
reaction.
I don't have time for it, you know.
But
I'll
try kindness,
love and respect.
The child is your perspective. You know, in your perspective, that's the child's perspective, you know. So.
Yeah. But, like, you know, there are some people that, you know, no matter how nice you try to be, they're just not. And you can go sit in your corner and bask in your BS. I don't have time for that. There's a lot of people who appreciate me and how I treat them, and I'd prefer to surround myself with them and leave the drama for the drama queens. Just saying.
Excellent. And Raconteur, what do you think?
Yeah, like you're saying, it reminds me of that expression, you catch more flies with honey than vinegar. And Sky, you're delineating between children and adults, but, you know, at the core, it's the same thing, really. I think she's saying in the poem is you know, it's my choice how I react to how you treat me. So, you know, pay attention to what you say because, you know, I'm going to react accordingly. And ultimately, you know, whether it's a child or an adult, you know, if you hold out your hand and they slap it away, then that speaks to their character, not necessarily yours. So, you know, I'm not going to play around with how I'm going to present it. If I extend that hand and you don't want it, I'll be like, oh, okay. And you sit there like a gargoyle and I'll walk away. You know, if like she says, if you want to engage and be polite, and she comes out of her you know, roughness, then you know, we can pretend it never happened. I don't care. You know, it's ultimately kind of an attitude thing.
Yeah. No. Exactly. Great comment. I'll bend over backwards for you if I'm eating off my plate.
Sunday.
But if you can't, you know, if all you choose to do is poke me and point out, you know, I call it that your negative Nell attitude, I don't want to hear it. Like, I'll try coming back with some honey, but if that don't work, I'm going to fry off your tongue with hot sauce. I mean, you know, it is what it is. And I'm one of the most forgiving people, to the point of being a schmuck. But when I get to that point where I'm done, I'm just done.
I mean, even down to the way that someone constructs a sentence or an idea. And Sky's real good at it. You know, you could say it, you know, in a negative way, or say the same thing in a positive way. You know, you speak of the absence of something instead of, you know, its presence. You know, you turn the situation around. You're still saying the same thing. You're just saying it in a positive light instead of a negative light.
Yeah.
Excellent. And Pretty Bird.
Unmuted.
Unmuted.
Yeah, I'm not used to that mute button. I just get to talking. So he did a great job on the pan too. I was like, I think I have like one. You have like almost 100. So that is just kind of fabulous. You did a great job with that. And I try not to think too hard when I write because then I don't know what the heck I'm doing. But I find it fabulous. And yeah, there is a lot to be said for, you know, I'll treat you how you treat me, except for that we're emotional beings. And there's a lot of us, that there's a big piece of most people that, you know, we will give them a, well, maybe they're having a bad day. Well, you know, maybe they just went through something. Maybe, you know, I'll come back at them in a little bit and give them a chance. But, oh, yeah, there's definitely a line where, like, you know what, you can kiss it, bye. Because, no, you can only take so much without an explanation or an apology. So I absolutely am very much, if you're nice to me, I'll be nice to you. But if you're going to be a complete whole with no explanation, no reasoning, no nothing, then I'm going to be not caring at all about anything. So you can think I'm a whole if you want to. So I completely understand. There is a line for me personally that, not a line in the poem, a line to cross, that in this day and age of everybody with their, and I'm not talking children because children are still learning who they are, but grown people have taken to the modern thing of, I can't, you're triggering me, which I can understand empowering yourself to do that, but I cannot cater myself to everybody else's trauma. I have my own trauma that I am not spewing on you. So don't bring me into your trauma. You treat me like a normal person. Keep your crap to yourself if I don't know you. You know? Like, you know, that's a, you can say that triggered me and that's fine. That part I can understand. But then do not tell me why all the details of your personal life when I came in here to ask you for a glass of water. You know, I have issues with, I'm old and set in my ways, but, you know, I would take that over somebody just being a douche for no reason, you know? So that's my two cents of nothing, but I really like the form. It's not one that I can do easily. So, you know, kudos. And yeah, you know, that golden rule is golden for a reason.
Amen. Yeah. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Pretty Bird. Excellent. I'm so glad you were able to make it, Deb. I know it's kind of early today, but I appreciate that. I'm like, hey, you mind if I move this up? I want to go to bed. So.
Yeah, no. It's never a problem. Whatever works best.
I was in bed at 8 o'clock on Monday. Just been. Last night, I was up super late, and I was like, I loved it. I loved it, so I don't want to hear any stories out of anybody in Raconteur, but oh, my God, I want to go to bed now. No, tonight I want to go to bed a little early. But do you want to talk about any shows coming up?
Well, sure. Tomorrow at 10 is my suite, and she's got her list of crazy fun words as inspiration. They're really, really cool. Check them out. I'm sure one of them or more, because I know that Wayne used, or no, it wasn't Wayne. Actually, AP used umpteen of them, almost all of them in his poem. That's 10 p.m. And then on Friday, we have Hatter's Jukebox, and he'll be educating the world on CCR, Creedence Clearwater Revival. We're off on Saturday because AP will be in an airplane, and on Sunday we have JCA's one of two monthly shows, and this one is called Send in the Clowns, and he's got stuff such as like John Wayne Gacy and clown sightings and Sheila Keen Warren. There's a lot of more people than anybody realizes that are terrified of clowns, so send in the clowns. And then that takes us to me on Monday, and I just realized that I didn't put up my November boards. So we'll talk about those later, but those are the next three, Wednesday or Thursday, Friday, Sunday.
Awesome. And thank you so much, Devin.
And,
enjoy your dinner.
Feel better, Scott. Love and respect, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.
Give me a chicken wing.
Bring me a frog leg. Just kidding, Raymond. Oh, my God. Oh. I don't know how people do that. I just don't know. I mean, to each his own, but I don't know about that. I would never do that. I don't care what country I was in. I don't care if I was trying to get into the culture. I would have to say no thank you. Definitely. All right, so I am going to play. What am I going to do? I want to play my halftime song. It is halftime. Mm-hmm. It is halftime, but I'm a little behind on my clips, but some of my clips are very short. So I'm going to play, I want to knock out some of these. So I'm going to play three of my clips that are short all together. It's like maybe 3 minutes. And then I'm going to go right into the halftime song. So I know you're all excited. So here we go. This is the bits of the show. All right, here we go.
May you never leave, Morsespa.
Even when a Trend Ocean pays you a compliment, it sounds like a threat.
Who are you?
I am Boba Fett.
Boba is dead.
I was. Left for dead on the sands of Tatooine. Like you. I was rescued by the Sand People. They took me in, treated me as one of their own. I tried to help them. Instead, I got them massacred by Nektar speedbikers.
Speedbikers defeated Paskan? That's highly unlikely.
I want you to help me. Help me recover my Firespray gunship.
Where is it?
Jabba the Hutt's palace.
Bib Fortuna took over his territory, and now he rules from that palace. If the ship is yours, why don't you just ask for it back?
Because I might not like the answer. Without my armor, I'm less persuasive.
If I help you, my debt is paid.
That is what you wish.
All this talk of the Empire, and they lasted less than 30 years. Mandalorians have existed 10,000. What do you know of this blade?
I am told it is the Dark Saber.
Indeed. Do you understand its significance?
Whoever wields it can lead all of Mandalore.
If it is won by creed in battle, it is said one warrior will defeat 20 and the multitudes will fall before it. If, however, it is not won in combat and falls into the hands of the undeserving, it will be a curse unto the nation. Mandalore will be laid to waste and its people scattered to the four winds.
The hilt is of a quality of Beskar I have never seen before.
It was forged over 1,000 years ago by the Mandalore Tar Zisla. He was both Mandalorian and Jedi.
I have met Jedi.
Then you have completed your quest.
I have.
Then you may join our covert as we rebuild.
This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
All right. Awesome. and I apparently can't find my clip, but I am looking. But one thing I will say is the Mandalorian hijacked the show. So halfway through the season, the Mandalorian came in, and like the whole episode was the Mandalorian. Boba Fett wasn't even in it. And I'm like, what happened to Boba Fett? And he just and the Mandalorian just totally took over the whole show, which was cool because they bleed into one another. But it was I was like, how can they even call this? How can they even call this the Book of Boba Fett when it's all the Mandalorian? But it was cool though because when the season 3 of Mandalorian came out, it led right into the timeline. I'm like trying to figure out where I put. Maybe I have to refresh. I don't know, because I shouldn't, because I put it in earlier. All right. Who knows information about this song, though? Do you know Pretty Birdie? I'll have to look it up. Do you know the top of your head? Or
I know that it is MC Chris, and it's from, I don't know, 20 years ago. And more than that, it's like mid-90s. And it is Stinkin' Awesome, and it was featured in a movie. I guess I can say the name of the movie. It's Zach and Mary. It's a Kevin Smith movie, I think. It's Zach and Mary, well, make a porno. And so this was their montage song of interesting, inappropriate things. And I thought it was awesome. It's wonderfully nerdy and fabulous. And that is his real voice. He's very short. He's like, I don't know, 5 foot or something. And that is his real high-pitched voice. I thought it was a woman. It is not. It is a full-grown man. So no disrespect to MC Chris, but I thought it was a girl.
I thought it was too, actually, when I was listening to it. And I know what I did with it. I know why I can't find it because I put it in music. All right. Okay, here we go. Thank you, Pretty Bird, for that shout out.
Kuzumo Senpa, a Mandalorian. War's over, I'm a piece of Mandalorian. The story of some star was a story in deep in the debate, but they play at Ben again. Rhyme renegade, show to penetrate first and second defense. I won't hesitate, got a job at two wins, arse the guy that delegates. Got something against Skywalker, someone he really hates, I don't give a I'm after solo, for all I carry, could be hiding at Yoda's dojo. Gotta make the money, credit's no good, when a job was run a shop in your neighborhood. I got a grappling hook, let's make this quick, cause I'm really booked. I'm a devious degenerate defender of the devil, stuck on all the trash compactors on the detention level. My backpack, got jet, well I'm Boba, the vet, well I bounty hunt for Jabba Hutt to finance my bed. Well I kill in deep space, a mask is over my face. Well I deliver the prize, but I still narrow my eyes, cause my time I don't like to waste. Get down! I'm a question, rep inside Enigma, get inside a slave one, find your home and signal from Endor to Hoth. Ridley to Spock, I'll find what you want, but there's gonna be a cost. Say my name is Boba Fett, I know what you say. That I'm acting right, yo, frozen a carbonite. Got telescopic sight, flame sewers on my wrist. You still don't get the gist, fight pizza made a kick. Hard pizza made a hit, you think I give it? Your mama is a bitch, I see you in a Sarlacc pit. You just flipped my switch, integrity's been dipped. You scratching on my ear, you know I shoot again. I got the bean and secatinas, wait and lick my lusty lips. So I'll let you get back inside your little spaceship. Give you a head start, cause I'm a sporting con. Consider the starting line to seek a smile, hide inside. Hope you have hyperdrive. Don't try to slip me five, cause I never take a bribe. He's a beat of a different drama, best funny hunter. Let no man put us under or else be put under. As in 6 feet, got an imperial fleet backing me up, gonna blow up any attempt to defeat. They got a death star, got full payments on my car. Handed over the hammerhead at most likely bar. Used to carjack him, he's a bar back. Just go to show how you can get back on the right track. And for me that's not an option, can't say that with more clarity. Me going legit would be like Jar Jar with speech therapy. My backpack, got jet, well I'm Boba, the vet. Well I'm bounty hunt for Jabba Hutt. Back in the day when I was a slave, living life in a fast lane, locked in a pod race. Mean street freak that became a best in case, so the space age, put that place.
love it. So I'm not much of a dancer. I'm a really bad dancer. I mean, I do dance, like, in the privacy of my own home when I'm all alone. But it's not even, like, real dancing. It's like a, you know, I don't know. But there is one song that could get me to dance all the time, and I don't know what it is. But I think this is the number two song that's going to be able to do that. Because I don't know if it's so geeky. I just like doing that. But the first one is definitely Tone Loc, Wild Thing. I don't know why. I could not help but move. When that song comes on, it's a problem, like a real problem.
it's got a wonderful bass line. It's very, very catchy, and it's got that very consistent, wonderful rhythm, and you know, it's one of those things.
But I think that's going to be my number one, too, because I just can't – I mean, my it's literally my – it's like my dance is like – you ever seen Night at the Roxbury's when he's, like, smashing in the window?
I will say there's a lot of videos of him playing club concerts and singing this live. He does not miss a beat that fast. That is a lot of fast talking. And he doesn't flub anything, not once. He gets all of it. He's really good, or he was really good at what he did. And it's a shame that he wasn't more famous than he was, because that took skill. And not for nothing, I'm not a big rap person, but I will do a nerd rap any day. And that is wonderful, wonderfully. I mean, he's got everything in there. I even, you know, there's a big old giant, like, area of grace for me that he talks, you know, Ripley from Aliens and Spock from Star Trek, because here's the thing. Different parts of the universe have different factions of whatever, and I am okay with that.
So awesome. I do love nerdum songs. I see there's one like there. I mean, I've seen a couple of them on YouTube, and some of them are quite brilliant to kind of just, one is like the Mandalorian had lyrics, or if the whatever had lyrics, and then you click on it, and then it's just, like, hilarious. But thank you. And the reason why that I'm just keeping it, I put it in separately because I'm keeping it with my stuff. I can play this in an after show clip at any point in time.
That's awesome.
So that's why I couldn't find it, because I didn't put it under, because I'm super, like, I don't know, particular, maybe? But
good,
I, like, you date the shows, and I have all my clips ready. Well, I mean, there's other words for that, right?
Well,
like,
there's
have
one.
All right, go ahead, pretty bird.
He just said we did anal.
Yeah, a little bit. Just a little bit.
But there's nothing wrong with that, you know. Things can get out of hand really, really fast when you're dealing with a lot of information. So you are perfectly fine.
Awesome. Yeah, I love just having everything ready. Like today, so I don't have to worry about anything. All right, so I'm going to read a poem, and then I'm going to play, I don't have too many clips left. I think I have three. So then I'm going to play a clip. It's like 4 minutes. And then I already put down one of your poems, actually. So then we're going to go to you. So, all right. So this is, I put it on the board. It's Asajj Ventress, mm-hmm. the Many-Faced. And I really love this character. So Asajj Ventress, the Many-Faced by Sky Darkholm. It is within those chuffing chambers and fiery pits that I gather a life long since lived, where I store Quaeli sectors of Dathomir, singing mountains of nightblood clans, rancor hives that chant a grave of thorns, where I was taken, a slave to Sinchin, and housebed of Ratatak, only to be left orphaned, then turned Jedi Padawan. And in that nightmare that calls itself memoir, a sneering mortality shadow grafts its grin. In the teeth of quietus, 10 years with Master Kai Narek was swallowed whole. It was then I was consumed, the meat of Sarlacc pits. It was then I gathered pin and thread and wove a path to the dark. When curved red-bladed sabers and the teachings of Dooku salvaged hate on Sereno, and all that was left to bear my name but oh, there was no dignity in such refuge. And soon betrayal was offered in a second master's hand. A spice of manufactured poison, I, the slave of influence, like a child lost in Kesselmine. And when finally I spat out its addiction, turned cloak from Sith, when yellow blade was wielded and I answered to the bounty hunter, Ball Banshee, and lived a life of solitude. When I scaled myself from the dark, nail by nail, fingers raw and soul skinless, when I wrapped chains around its vulnerable state, hardened yet still warmed with blood, I found those dark disciplines wavering in the grip of Quinlan Vos. And in that moment, I gathered fragments of a life long since lived, that last and pathetic goodbye. I summoned a memory of the dead and gave redemption to a soul that called itself mine. End poem. And this is heavily influenced by a book I read. The storyline was amazing, and I just felt really, I just loved the storyline and her struggle, and that was in The Dark Disciple by Christine Golden. End poem.
Are you going to go first, Rex?
I thought you might want to, because this is kind of a rally.
So I've got things, and so you go first.
I kind of want to defer to your things.
All right, that's fine. My things are many things that have nothing to do with the things that are envisioned, but have touched on other things, so it is a chain of things. Okay. First of all, I love this. There are very few people or characters or whatever, folks, that go through this transition and that transition and then fight their way to a less deeper depth. Apparently, I cannot English today. Climb out of where they don't want to be, where they were forced into by circumstance, to get to a place where at least they can remain neutral and get some redemption. And I love that. I love that. I just do. And in the last half of this, this hardened yet still warm with blood, and in that moment I gathered fragments of a life long since lived, that last pathetic goodbye. I might lose my shit, just saying. I summoned a memory of the dead and gave redemption to the soul that called itself mine. You know what, I'm a little bit at the surface. Don't mind my emotion. I hate blubbering on the air. I hate blubbering, period, but I blubber because I'm an emotional being and highly imperfect. The thing is, those pathetic goodbyes, the goodbyes that aren't worth what ended, those ones that kind of transition from a something good or bad into not even a blip of a nothing that you need to forgive yourself for. You know, and so you find through, and you dig through whatever it is that no longer exists, and you need to forgive yourself to heal, or forgive them to heal, or forgive yourself really, because you know they can kiss my ass. Not really, because I'm not actually a jerk, but that is a hard thing. And to have changed so much, to have veered off a path of whatever you want to call fate, to be whatever life has made you, and decide you don't want to be that, and look back and be like, you know what? It's okay. That acceptance to help heal and feel a little familiar in the skin that you call your own is a big stinking deal, and it's not an easy thing. So I absolutely love this, and I apologize for my emotional brouhaha.
You know, there's something about introspection that leads to, you know, for lack of another word, that's kind of an epiphany in your life when you decide that, you know, this is a turning point, and sometimes it takes a near-death experience to reveal that to you, to turn on the way that you look at things. But it all comes back to, you know, I guess our view of ourselves. And that's what drives me crazy all the time, because, you know, there's always, you know, questions at least to me, it's like could I have done anything differently, or is this the way it would have been regardless of whatever path I took, whatever choice I make, you know, and being okay with the way things turned out, and ultimately to me too, it has to do with the influence, or thinking that you have any influence over the outcome. It's a tough thing to accept, and I think once you realize that you can't influence it, so you need to kind of let it go, it bothers you less. That's a tough lesson to experience, and your role in the events too, I think is what centers around that forgiveness that Pretty Bird is talking about. It's like you're true to yourself, and you've got your integrity and your relationship with life and the universe and everything. So, you know, you need to forgive yourself for what happened, because, you know, again, if you're true to yourself, then there's no reason to be upset with, your role in things. I mean, it would be nice if you could, you know, not have to let things go or lose them, but, you know, at the same time, it's like, well, this is what was going to happen anyway. So, you know, ultimately, this is what we were building up to. This is what we were preparing for. It's a crazy thought, but it's a beautiful poem.
Thank you. And I had the Sarlacc pit, so relatable, right? Call me Mr. Rex. Okay, I am, and by the way, it's such a great honor to have such a reaction when reading a poem, by the way, so please never apologize. I mean, we all want to touch people when we write, right? So, all right, I'm going to play the two clips from the Mandalorian hijack. I did play one of them already when he went to the armorer and was, like, talking about the Darksaber. And the Darksaber played a big part in this, because you're going to see it later on in Mandalorian 3, because the Darksaber becomes a big thing in that series, which we'll see next week, by the way, because I know that I normally only do one Star Wars in the first week of the month, but this month, because there was 5 weeks on Wednesday, and because Boba Fett really goes hand in hand with season 3 of Mandalorian, I didn't want to take a break, because we're doing a special Lego Star Wars Christmas episode for December. I didn't want to wait till all the way to January to bring in the Mandalorian season 3. So next week is also Star Wars Mandalorian season 3, and you can kind of see where the storyline plays out that I'm about to play. When he's trying to figure out what to do with this Darksaber. And of course, in season two, you see the Mandalorian take off his helmet, which was against the code, to say goodbye to Grogu. And he breaks the code. So he's going to get kicked out. So he has to go find redemption in that as well. And you're going to see a little bit about that here. And one thing on a different side note that I loved about this show is they brought Cad Bane into live action, and I love Cad Bane. I just love Cad Bane. I loved him in the Clone Wars series, so it was so cool to see him in live action, and they just did a really good job. But that has nothing to do with, with these clips, but I thought I would just tell you. All right, so here we go. I'm going to play these two clips, and then we've got another poem by Pretty Bird. So here we go.
Where did you come upon the Darksaber?
I defeated Moff Gideon.
Did you kill him?
No. But he was sent off to the New Republic for interrogation.
and he will face justice for his crimes.
Death would have been justice for his atrocities.
This is true. The blood of millions of our kind is on his hands.
And then he will be executed for his crimes by the New Republic Tribunal.
We shall see. The songs of eons past foretold of the Mythosaur rising up to herald a new age of Mandalore. Sadly, it only exists in legends. Where did you come upon the Beskar Spear?
It was the gift of a Jedi. It can block a lightsaber. I used it to defeat Moff Gideon.
It can also pierce Beskar armor. Its mere existence puts Mandalorians at risk. Mandalorian steel is meant for armor, not weapons.
Then forge it into armor.
The Darksaber is a more noble weapon for you to wield.
Have you ever heard of Bo-Katan Krees?
Bo-Katan is a cautionary tale. She once laid claim to rule Mandalore based purely on blood and the sword you now possess. But it was gifted to her and not won by creed. Bo-Katan Krees was born of a mighty house, but they lost sight of the way. Her rule ended in tragedy. They lost their way, and we lost our world. Had our sect not been cloistered on the Moon of Concordia, we would have not survived the Great Purge. Those born of Mandalore strayed away from the past. Eventually, the Imperial Interlopers destroyed all that we knew and loved in the Night of a Thousand Tears. Those that walked the way escaped the curse prophesied in the creed. Though our numbers were scattered to the winds, our adherence to the way has preserved our legacy for the generations until we may someday return to our homeworld. What shall I forge?
Something for a foundling.
This is the way.
For a specific foundling. Grogu.
He's no longer in your care. He's with his own kind now.
I want to see him. Make sure he's safe.
In order to master the ways of the Force, Jedi must forego all attachment.
That is the opposite of our creed. Loyalty and solidarity are the way.
What shall I forge for the foundling Grogu? Have you ever removed your helmet?
No.
Has it ever been removed by others?
Never.
This is the way.
This is the way.
Din Djarin, have you ever removed your helmet? Have you ever removed your helmet? By creed, you must vow.
I have.
Then you are a Mandalorian no more.
I beg you for your forgiveness. How can I atone?
Leave. Apostate.
According to creed, one may only be redeemed in the living waters beneath the mines of Mandalore.
But the mines have all been destroyed.
This is the way.
And that leads us into the Mandalorian 2 storyline, which is exciting. And I love how they have Bo-Katan. All right. So I hope you enjoyed. A little taste of the show. I do have one more clip, but we have another poem. Pretty Bird. You're on mute. Or I'm on mute.
That was me because I never push my mute button. And then with my crazy dog, I'm pushing my mute button. But then my screen wants to lock. I forget that it's there looking at me. So. You would think that me and technology were friends, but not so much. But, okay, so this is Ethereal Goddess of Shadows, and it's one of two that I brought for the quote, a piece of friendly advice. Here's a piece of friendly advice. I assume I know everything. So this is the Ethereal Goddess of Shadows. It's a very short one. Universal darkness, invisible, empathic powers, take my hand. I will show you your fears, for I can see your secrets laid out before you. I am the spaces in your mind. I am the darkness between stars. Science and prophecy are born of my being. Face me and learn who you are. Impaling you at the slightest touch, you will see what I see. I am the reason people fear the dark. And poem.
Awesome. I love how you say science and prophecy are both of my being. I like sci-fi, but also I like fantasy and prophecy and lore. And so the fact that you're mixing them together, saying she's a being of both, is just brilliant. Also, it's very daunting. I will show you your fears. And being bare and laid open and raw for someone to be able to see all your secrets and, mind reading is a scary thing because sometimes what goes on in people's mind can be scary. So I love that. I love that take on it. And then, this is the truth of it. Face me and learn who you are. So this reminds me of something that's less, it's sci-fi fantastical, but also something very true. Sometimes when people are faced with who they truly are by someone kind of saying, okay, I see through you, I see you, I see your secrets that you're holding, and I'm going to hold up a mirror to your face. And for people that are not, truthful to themselves, people that are not, perhaps not showing the face that they really are, it can be, horrifying. So, face me and learn who you are. And, it takes, people need that, I think, to see who you are sometimes. And even on a smaller sense, sometimes people don't, they have to face a mirror and then they could make two choices. They could say, this is what the truth is, and I don't like it, and I'm going to work to change it. Or, they get angry because they don't want to believe it, there's a...
It's option two. Unilaterally.
So, excellent piece, excellent piece. And it is a brevity.
Thank you.
But I think the thought process behind it can really be just chewed on and talked over and mold on, because I think it hits on those, on you know, on that language that I was just speaking on that idea and on that conversation. Excellent. Raconteur, what do you think?
You know, that quote is probably one of the best ones you picked, in the sense that it applies to so much. When you're talking about human relationships and relationships, well, human, alien, it's just relationships, you know, and personal interactions. There's the different perspectives of, you know, who you think you are, who you actually are, how people see you. And sometimes everything magically aligns and it's the same thing. But more often than not, you know, people don't see themselves as they really are, or other people see them as something different, and only time will they learn who they really are and things like that. But there's always that one person that you know, sees through all the shit, and that's the idea of that quote to me, and you know, that's basically what she says in the poem to me. You know, it's like, you could act however you want to act, but you know, I see you back there. And there's no hiding it. There's no covering it. And you know, this is just what it is. And you know, accept it. Just assume that I know. And you know, it can be a scary thought if you're trying to hide something, or it can be a comforting thought if you're trying to discover something. So it's got its own trepidation built into it. It's an interesting piece. I love the way she explains it.
Thank you.
Excellent comment. Thanks, Eric. Thank you. Do you guys have anything you want to plug?
The hole in the ozone?
A hole in the ozone. Do you have a show next month, Raconteur?
No, that would be this month. Because it's the first.
Oh, yeah, this month.
So,
sorry, that's what I meant.
I'm toying with the idea of, you've heard the expression famous last words. Well, what if you knew, you know, you were going to die, and you were, like, trying to craft how you would say goodbye? You know, that idea of the perfect epitaph, or not even just, you know, something snarky that, like, you know, I knew I was sick, or I told you I was sick. You know, that kind of thing, as that's supposedly a tombstone, I think, on Boot Hill. You know, I told you I was sick, but you know, think things like that. You know, if you knew you were going to go, there's a couple of people. I know when Leonard Nimoy passed, he had something profound about flowers or something like that. And there's a couple of quotes from some people's famous last words that I'm going to quote. In the topic board, but you know, that idea of you know, when you're ready to say goodbye, is there a message you want to leave behind? Is it something you want to say, or even, you know, relate to how you want to be remembered?
Awesome topic, and that's on the 22nd of November, because it's this month.
Yes,
we're not in October anymore. Thank you. All right, so also, I don't usually do this far. I have a lot of stuff going on this month, but for just storyboards, again, The Mandalorian 3, have you guys ever seen The Land Before Time?
Yeah.
Yep, yep, yep.
Oh, I love Ducky. So I am paying. I wanted to do this one for a while, but... My favorite ones, I really have to be just do them right, or I can't do them, and I really, it's one of my favorites. Oh my gosh, oh, I love that film, and I mean, I know it's a children's film, but I mean, it's just wonderful, and the themes are, you can take to a whole different level. I mean, who hasn't felt, you know, loss in their life? And I think that even if you bring a theme about that, I mean, I don't, you know, everybody will be crying on the air, but you know, like, there are so many things that you can take from that film, life lessons and go beyond, yeah, the fact that it's a children's film, but the themes on it are there, last a lifetime. And, of course, you could also write about Ducky. But and then this is a more rare one, but I don't know if anybody's ever seen Swan Lake, Swan Lake 1981 version.
No.
It was like this
maybe
Japanese film thing. Yeah, it was brilliant.
Oh, then no.
It was, well, they have like an English voiceover thing. But the film is actually on there too, on YouTube. I have a link for it if you really wanted to watch it. But it was the first, when I was young, it was the first time I think I really heard classical music. And I think that is why Swan Lake is still my favorite piece of music. Out of any genre, Swan Lake is my favorite music. And I think it was because when I seen that film, I was really young. It was an animated film. And I was completely taken by it. And I just fell in love with classical music after that, and it's remained my favorite song. So I really wanted to pay tribute to that. So that's coming up this month too. And then of course we have the D&D last of the month. We have the fighter. So lots of stuff coming up on storyboards. But I'm going to play my last clip, which is a longer clip. It's the last clip, but it is the longest clip. And then we have another poem. So all right. So sit back and relax. Play with the puppies. Get a drink.
Fun.
Yeah, I can't do that right now because I every time I say I'm going to play a clip, I'm nowhere near my clips. That's very bad today. So I can't put fun stuff on top of that. But I'll play it for you after, though, I promise. All right, here we go. Somewhere near here. All right.
I have to respond. I have to respond in some way. At the very least, I should.
You returned so quickly. Was your venture successful?
You won't have to worry about Freetown.
Did you convince the Marshal to remain neutral?
Yes.
Good. I want this over as soon as possible. Does Fett have any other resources to call upon? He used to live among a Tusken Raider tribe in the desert.
They no longer exist.
Are you sure?
Yes. We destroyed them ourselves.
Does Fett know that?
He has no idea. He thinks they were killed by Nikto speedbikers. We left evidence behind to encourage such a conclusion. He meted out his revenge on them. In his mind, the matter is resolved.
I didn't realize the Pike Syndicate was so ruthless.
Pragmatic. They were charging us protection. We have to protect our margins.
Indeed you do.
So when will this all be over?
That all depends on how much your two stomachs can bear.
No more explosives. I didn't sign off on bombing Garza's sanctuary. I agreed to surgical strikes, not open warfare.
With apologies, it seems that line has been crossed.
Well, I am still the mayor of Mos Espa, and I will not see it destroyed.
The Fat Gatra is taking refuge in the ruins of the sanctuary. It will take extreme measures to remove them.
I think I have an idea how to draw Boba Fett out.
As we wait for the reinforcements to arrive with Cobb fans from Freetown, our forces are quietly patrolling the streets of the old city. The Pike Syndicate has not yet arrived in numbers, but the minute they do, we will see them before they see us. The truce you negotiated with the other families of Mos Espa will ensure that they will remain neutral and allow us to gain the upper hand by surprising the arriving soldiers. The Gamorrean guards are posted in the Clatoonian territory at the starport and will alert us if any of the Pike Syndicate forces arrive. Crescent in Trandoshan territory, keeping tabs on the streets of the municipality in front of City Hall. Are with the other mod, keeping an eye on the workers' district and the Aqualish quarter. As you can see, all our flanks are covered. Nobody is sneaking up on us. When the people of Freetown arrive, we will have the forces required to pivot our strength to whatever region the Pikes choose to attack from.
For now,
we wait.
Looking for a job, you're late.
I've already got a job. I'm here to negotiate on behalf of the Pike Syndicate.
I don't negotiate with gutless murderers.
If that's not the Quacktor calling the stifling slimy.
Clear out. Tell your bosses we know they're outnumbered.
I wouldn't be counting on the people of Freetown to be coming anytime soon. I paid Marshal Van for visit. He should have never left him without his armor.
With them?
Don't see him. Any news on the others?
Would be a miracle if any survived. All three Gotras of Mosespa turned on us.
It was the smart move.
It was. I suppose you'll be heading out.
I'm not.
You should.
Against the creed. I gave you my word. I'm with you until we both fall.
You really buy into that bent of fodder?
I do.
Good.
The way I see it, we have two choices. We wait until they get into position and launch a siege on their terms. We rush out there, catch them unaware, then we can escape to your ship at the palace.
I can't abandon Mos Espa. These people are counting on me.
Okay, then. We'll both die in the name of honor.
You sure you want to stay?
This is the way.
Sando! Look who's here!
Hey, what are you doing here? Oh, okay, little guy. I'm happy to see you too. I didn't know when I'd see you again. It's okay. Yeah, I missed you too, buddy. But, we're in a bit of a bind here right now. Be careful, you keep your head down. Stay hidden until the fight's over. Hey, that's the shirt. You got the shirt.
Clear out. Take your hoodlum gang with you.
I've known you a long time, Bobo. One thing I can't figure. What's your angle?
This is my city. These are my people. I will not abandon them.
Like the Tuscans.
Don't toy with me. I'm not a little boy any longer. And you are an old man.
I'm still faster than you.
That may be. But I have armor.
Let's find out. Get off to your Bacta tank.
This is my city.
You gave it a shot. You tried to go straight, but you've got your father's blood pumping through your veins. You're a killer. This isn't the first time I beat you out on a job. There's no shame in it. Consider this my final lesson. Look out for yourself. Anything else is weakness.
Forces have pulled back from Mos Espal and shall be arriving here in Mos Eisley shortly so that we may disembark.
You can't just cut and run. We lost soldiers too.
We had a deal.
Our deal was that Tatooine was going to be a hospitable place to do business.
It is.
Half of my men were either shot or eaten by a Rancor. Is that what you call hospitable?
Okay, so the only complaint I have is that he killed Cad Bane, and I want a Cad Bane show. So, I mean, I don't know. All right, I hope you enjoyed. That was the end of it. So, oh, I should have said it's a spoiler alert, right? Yes, at the beginning. I forgot to say that. Spoiler alert. I'm pretty weird. Oh, I already
okay, so this is my little. This poem is, it's coming with a warning. It is fully PG-13, so it's a little risque. So if you don't want to listen to it, y'all can not listen to it. This was originally written to the quote, "I'm not insulting you, I am describing you." But I stuck it under the same show quote as the last one that, you know, just you know, a friendly word of advice or whatever. Assume I know everything. And this is called, "It Ain't Like You Don't Know." And it goes like this. I would need stitches to bite my tongue hard enough not to call you on your shit. Indole isn't my perfume of choice, but you wear it better than anyone I know. Tucking your tail or whatever phallus you pretend is worth a damn between your legs isn't charm and it ain't fooling anyone. You're not man enough to be a pussy. Can't buy forgiveness with chocolate-coated lies, and you're not pretty enough to get away with pretending stupid. Everyone can't be a good person, but I have faith that you can pretend you are. Maybe that's enough to fool people only interested in the speckled surface of your insecurities. The mirror will gladly show you what you want to see, but your charm isn't fooling anyone, and I would need stitches to bite my tongue hard enough not to call you on your shit. End poem.
Oh, my God. Can I have this? And, like, every time I get mad at somebody, and I'm, like, one of those people that I'm, like, I don't know what to say, and then, like, 3 days later, I'm having a conversation inside my head with somebody, and I got all the things I want to say, and to that person who was just horrific, and it's too late, I'm going to have this. This is going to be, like, in my back pocket with a card that says, guess what?
Yeah.
I love this. Because... I do, especially those two lines. I think it's those two lines that repeat. I'm just going to have, like, a montage, right? Because sometimes people will say something, and if I'm not prepared for the argument, like, if I'm not prepared, I'm not, like, and someone catches me off guard, and I freeze. I don't know what to say. I panic. Like, I don't know. I'm just not good. And then I'll walk away, and I'll be angry, and I won't tell them that I'm angry, but I'm angry, and I don't know how to tell them I'm angry. And then for the next few days, I'm like, I could have said this, and I could have done that, and I could have said this, and then they could have done this, and this, and that, and this. And I just love this because it just is so upfront and so basically, you know what, this is not okay. You're not okay. What you're saying isn't okay. And I love that line, and I would make stitches to bite my tongue. I don't know, that's like all you want your shit. I love that. It is my favorite lines. But all the in-betweens building on that were amazing as well. The can't buy forgiveness with chocolate-coated lies, and I think it's, you know, everybody tries to back up and say, oh yeah, like in this and feed you the sweet in hopes that you don't taste the bitter. And I think and when you can just say, you know what, no, I've had enough, I don't believe you, and I'm done, and I'm removing myself from you because it's not healthy for me, and I've had enough. And I think it's so important to love yourself that much and to be able to have those walls and those spaces where you're like, no. Excellent. This is excellent. Pretty good. What a way to go out for the night,
thank
huh?
Thank you.
Rock and tour. What do you think? Unmute?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. I can now.
Yes, I can now.
Oh, I'm sitting here jabbering away. And now I got lost. What was the title?
And
which one was
stitches.
It?
And I would need stitches to bite my tongue hard enough to cause
you
to pop on your
head.
I'm going to memorize
my favorite
that line.
My favorite one, yes. Oh my God, there's something about that when you try and hold something back that you can't. That sits so. Yeah, you need to hear it, but I don't know that you could take it, and it's not my place to force it down your throat. It's oh my God, those the ideas of that. But you know, just the way that you know. Her words read all the time. There's always some intrinsic truths in them that you know, some people just aren't ready to hear. And the beauty of it is it's always just, you know, it's just what she sees. And there's no pretense. There's no dressing it up or making it, you know, palatable. It's like, well, this is it. I was in a mood. Deal with it.
I dressed it up. I said, Indol instead of shit stink.
Why use two words when one will suffice? Oh my God!
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Rex. No, go ahead.
No, it's just beautiful.
Well, it's towards the beginning with that. right before the isn't charm and it ain't fooling anyone, I was like, oh, she's just going right for it. I love it.
Yeah.
my favorite line in this, believe it or not, because I wrote this with very specific, you know, a series of very specific guys, the ones, like, in mind, the ones that think they're all that, but really they're just, you know, a pain in my tuchus. And so that whole, you know, you're not pretty enough to get away with pretending stupid, like, that's a line that I've actually used. And they're like, what? Yeah, exactly. Sell it somewhere else, mister.
I love that self-confidence and to be able to say, nope, enough's enough. And nope, I'm calling you out on it. I'm not holding my tongue anymore. I'm not holding it back anymore. This is how it is, and you can't change the truth by misconstruing it with how you want me to see it. Excellent poem.
And
I want to say my thank yous because it's 9 o'clock. I'm so excited. I'm going to bed. Well, I haven't been sleeping well, and you know, last night I actually slept pretty well, but it was good. So I'm looking forward to sleeping tonight. It was like the first night I hadn't woken up in the middle of the night to have to take a hot shower to get the heat from the water, but so it was very, very nice. But I do want to say my thank yous. I want to thank, of course, Raconteur, Prebird, Deborah Lee for all calling in, submitting, sharing conversation, poetry, and Star Wars with me. And, yeah, I thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank
like
you so
it was a pleasure. I'm glad I could make it today.
Me too. I'm glad. You come whenever you want, and even if you don't want to, I mean, I want you. Even if you can't, you can always drop sound class.
If you want
even
to,
if you don't
not,
want
you're
to. We're dragging you here. I told you at 8:20 it was happening. It's kicking in for a little while now. I was saying something. But, always feel free to peruse the quotes and to drop poems and take part in whatever way you can or wish to. And I will see you guys soon, and thank you so much.
Absolutely. Great show. Thanks for having me.
It's like, oh, I promised Rex
I feel like it was like, you know, a mini showcase because I had so many. I almost feel bad. I kind of don't, but I kind of do, you know?
I
was like, yay, no poetry.
Okay,
oh,
so,
no, it's all mine.
Oh, no, but Bev had a poem and I had a poem, and, I don't mind at all because I want to do a clip and a poem, I want to do poetry, too, but I also want to do the clips. But, I mean, I love that you brought them because it made it possible to do that. So you can showcase anytime you want. If you don't see any poems down, drop 5. You're fine. But
you all heard that, right?
If there's no poems there, yeah, give me something to read and to do. Absolutely. But I promise,
well,
Rack,
okay,
so here you go.
It's fun. Look at the fun we're having.
There you go, Rack. I delivered. I did
promise with
that
the
I
tone.
Look at the fun we're having.
I know, Tyrion, my Game of Thrones man. All right, I'm going to play the outro music. It's from the Book of Boba Fett, and I will see you guys soon. Thank you.
All right, good night.
Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio.